Hello, and welcome to the CAAV podcast. After several years of development and a 2019 manifesto commitment for England's residential let sector, the government has finally introduced the Renters Reform Bill into Parliament, saying it could be law by the end of the year. Even so, it has held over several items for later legislation, and a full implementation might take some time. So what changes are ahead, and what do they mean for landlords and tenants in future? Rebecca Collins, Technical and Policy Advisor at the CAAV, joins me to go through the detail. So Rebecca, perhaps you could set the scene a little. What's the background to this bill, and what does it seek to achieve?
Hi Olivia, and thanks. Good to be back on a podcast with you. The background to the bill really surrounds the fact that many tenants are feeling insecure in their own properties. A lack of them being sure that they're not going to, if you like, get kicked out of their properties with the landlord serving notice and regaining possession. And what we know is that there's an increasing number of, you know, families and elderly in the rented sector, and a growing proportion of the let sector are made up of these groups. And so from a government policy area, this is of concern. You know, a considerable number of their electorate are concerned about this issue. And so really, that's the background to this bill. And it is looking to introduce a system that provides the security that tenants are looking for.
So what are the key elements as you see them?
Well, I think the first point to make is that what we have at the moment is a bill that's in its very early stages. It's only been introduced to Parliament very recently on the 17th of May. It hasn't reached a second reading as of yet. That's probably going to be maybe perhaps as early as next week, but we wait to see. So it's got a long way to go yet. In terms of the key elements, and the ones that kind of grab most headlines, is this proposed abolishment of Section 2021 of the Housing Act. And that's the landlord's no-fault possession ground. This has been a fundamental point of government policy. And in all honesty, I think it's very unlikely that the government would be backtracking from this particular point of its policy objectives. What we see is essentially the abolishment of assured shorthold tenancies going forward. So no new shortholds, tenancies, ASTs, would be able to be created in future as and when this Act gets implemented and takes full effect. And so instead, we'd have a regime of periodic assured tenancies, with then the landlord having to work within a framework which gives the landlords specific grounds under Section 8, to regain possession for particular circumstances. And so while the government have proposed to abolish Section 21, and we suspect that will almost certainly happen, what they have done to kind of complement that is give landlords more new grounds, as well as modifying some of the existing grounds, to be able to give landlords more options in terms of regaining possession to cover a whole range of scenarios. We can obviously cover these in more detail in this podcast, but again, we wait to see how these actually evolve. We're still in the early stages of this bill, and therefore we can't be 100% sure at this stage what might be included or possibly even taken out of this bill as it progresses through Parliament. I think the other thing to note, and you've mentioned it in your introduction, is how much of the original proposals that we saw in the white paper are actually being held over and will require later legislation to come into effect. The government possibly has overstretched itself. These are fairly ambitious, wide-reaching reforms of the private rented sector. And, you know, within this parliamentary period, it's possibly trying to scale back what's included in the renters reform to make it more manageable, albeit leaving the door open for further reform with later legislation when time permits.
So will it affect existing tenancies, or does it just apply to new ones?
Well, dealing with new ones first, once the bill receives royal assent, which we're told and the government says could be later this year, then the new regime is going to apply to every new tenancy created. However, only after a commencement date has been set. Now, this commencement date is actually going to be set by regulations, so we don't actually know at this stage when the changes might take effect. If we look across, say, for example, over at Wales and the implementation of the Renting Homes Wales Act, the Renting Homes Wales Act received royal assent in 2016. It's only in the latter part of last year, in December 2022, that actually the Act was implemented along with its many statutory instruments. Now, okay, in fairness, in Wales, that was a wholesale reform of the private rented sector, so it went much further, and essentially they've got an entirely new regime in Wales. But it does sort of provide a flavour that it might be a little while yet, even after royal assent, before the Act would start to bite even on new tenancies. But again, we wait to see. For existing tenancies, the bill does provide a period of transition. And essentially, short-term tenancies would convert to the regime at a future date. Again, to be set, but we don't know exactly when. And that would see existing tenancies either kind of caught once fixed-term agreements come to an end and they become periodic. So at that point, they would be caught by the regime. But also potentially with the inclusion of an extended application date, essentially a future date which the government would set, say, 5 or 10 years in the future, would essentially act to sweep up all of the existing tenancies and bring them in the scope of the new regime and convert them at that particular date in the future.
Are there any specific changes afoot for agricultural tenancies?
I think there are a couple of points to note here. The first one I would mention relates to assured agricultural occupancies, or AAOs. These are going to be retained. And I think what's helpful here is that agricultural landlords will essentially, they've got provisions in the bill where agricultural landlords will still have the ability to opt out of the provision of an AAO. And I mean, that's how the regime works at the moment with the ASTs. So with service of a notice, if the landlord doesn't want it to be an AAO, they can serve a notice. And essentially, landlords will be able to issue a new periodic tenancy instead of an AAO, as long as they inform the tenant from the outset. So the new regime essentially largely preserves the position with AAOs and the ability to opt out as the situation exists at the moment. I think the other points of interest are where there are dwellings that form part of agricultural tenancies, either farm business tenancies or Agricultural Holdings Act, where you have a dwelling as part of a holding. And these relate to two specific grounds for repossession that have been introduced, and they were included actually in response to points raised by the CAV and others. So these two specific agricultural grounds for repossession include the ability to regain possession if a landlord wants to house an agricultural worker. So that's really helpful. It doesn't go beyond agricultural worker, so you couldn't regain possession perhaps for another diversified use. Still, it's a useful addition. And the other one is where an outgoing tenant, so farm tenant that would be under the 1986 Act or the 1995 Act, where they've sort of sublet properties, dwellings that they have within their holding, they'll be able to yield up and give vacant possession of the entire holding to the landlord, including those residential dwellings that they may have let out. So again, very useful addition that's been added to Section 8 and which we're pleased to see.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned other new additional grounds for possession. Can you talk us through some of them and highlight any significant changes here?
Yes, I'll mention perhaps the ones which are most pertinent or of interest to the majority of landlords. There's been a few that have been added, as well as some additions, and also one which has been repealed. Of the ones that are new, I've just mentioned the two new agricultural grounds, but I think usefully and of help for many landlords will be the ability to regain possession should they have an intention to sell the house. So again, that's useful because lots of landlords would want to sell potentially with vacant possession. This ground cannot be used within the first 6 months of a new tenancy, and the period of notice is 2 months. But again, you know, it's a very useful way of property being able to be got back with vacant possession if the landlord is going to sell. The other one which is useful as mandatory ground is for repeated rent arrears, where if the tenant is repeatedly late, actually the difficulty with the current ground is that the tenant has to be 2 months in arrears, both at time of serving of the notice and at the time of the hearing, in order for it to be a mandatory ground. Actually, this is, you know, it does offer some help, because what tenants would typically do is they would pay just enough rent back to be under 2 months in arrears, say perhaps 1.5 months in arrears, say, just before the hearing, so it then doesn't become a mandatory ground. So I think this is a helpful addition and provides some reassurance where landlords are really struggling, where tenants are repeatedly falling behind in their rent. In terms of amendments, I mean, there's been a number of amendments to a number of grounds. I think one of the perhaps more useful ones is for occupation by the landlord or one of the member's close family member. Currently, a landlord would have to serve a prior notice to a tenant to let them know that possession could be sought for the landlord to live in the property. And the landlord would have had to have previously lived in the property. Actually, the amendment that's put in the bill removes those requirements, which is really helpful. So if a private landlord buys a property and wishes to rent it out, say, until their son or daughter is to move into it, they're now able to do that. So I think that's a helpful addition. Being repealed, and I think of some note here, is the ground for if the dwelling has previously been used as a holiday let. And this fits in with other areas of policy that we see around holiday lets throughout the UK. There's considerable pressure and concern about properties being rented out for short-term holiday lettings. And essentially, the ground that allowed a landlord to say, well, I'm going to let it to a private tenant for 9 months, and then I'm going to let it out in peak summer season for 3 months for holiday lets, landlords will no longer be able to do that. So I think that's a notable one to digest, really, because it will affect a number of landlords.
Of course, there are times when landlord and tenant disagree. So what procedures will be in place to adjudicate? Is it just a case of heading straight to court?
Well, Olivia, you touched on an important point here. I mean, I've talked about the additional grounds, which have been included in the bill, which may offer some comfort to many landlords. However, whilst they might be reassured in part by the additional grounds, indeed, they cater for probably most of the scenarios that landlords require, there's still going to be concerns about the procedures and processes for regaining possession. And, you know, the questions around, is there enough capacity for the courts, or indeed other mechanisms to determine a dispute or indeed repossession matter? And could these be dealt with expediently? We know that the court system now has been under some considerable strain, particularly with the backlog of hearings following the COVID pandemic. And many landlords are going to be concerned that the government's commitments to sort of streamline and simplify processes, are they actually going to deliver? This we're going to have to wait to see. We don't know. However, what we do see in the Renters Reform Bill are provisions for the creation of a potential mandatory landlord's redress scheme, potentially offering redress to tenants. And this has been publicised as a private rented sector ombudsman's scheme that's intended to be able to resolve the issues in a quicker and cheaper and less adversarial way than the courts. Again, we do wait to see what this may look like in practice, but it's got the formations there of perhaps a potential alternative to having to go straight to court.
Now, you've mentioned the abolition of short-hold tenancies to be replaced by periodic assured tenancies. Does that mean it will no longer be possible for the parties to have a fixed-term agreement?
Well, in its current form, as it's currently drafted, the bill provides that agreements for a term of more than 7 years will not be assured tenancies. What that means is that it will remain possible to create longer tenancies of more than 7 years and for these to be fixed term. This is an area that will be concerning many landlords because, of course, with periodic assured tenancies, a tenant could serve notice and leave, potentially after a couple of months. And so landlords may be concerned that they will see greater voids with no rent being paid. And, you know, what sort of strain will this have on them? You know, it's a form of investment and they may even have debt to service. However, in reality, I suspect that many landlords will also know the current market conditions. There's actually a shortage of available let properties at the moment. And in reality, practicalities of it are that many tenants, once they've found a property they want to live in and rent, they're probably going to be reluctant to leave if they're going to struggle to find another property to live in. So, yes, there are concerns around the fact that fixed-term tenancies are essentially being abolished, but I think actually many landlords may feel that actually in reality it won't frequently be a problem. There are, though, there are particular sectors, such as private landlords that let to students in sort of not purpose-built student accommodation, so just a house that's been let to students. That's a particular area of concern, and indeed there's been much press on that particular subject over the last few days, and I've seen reports that the government is already reconsidering its position on fixed term tenancies for the student let market in particular, and it may keep short holds. What's not clear, of course, is how might that be carved out just to apply to student lets rather than the broader private let sector. That's not clear. So that's one that we'll have to keep an eye on.
Certainly some complications. And you've mentioned that the bill leaves out several elements to be implemented later. Can you talk us through what those are?
Yes, that's right. Yes, there are a few bits that have been sort of carved out to be dealt with later, so to speak. The original white paper pointed to reforms relating to housing standards in particular. And the proposals were that the decent home standard would also be applied to the private rented sector. This isn't going to be implemented by the Renters Reform Bill. In any way, we still await the government response to its consultation that it held last year. The other items awaiting later legislation include the fact that it would be illegal for landlords or agents to have blanket bans on renting to tenants in receipt of benefits, or indeed tenants with children. And also there were some proposals to strengthen local councils' enforcement powers, as well as introducing a new requirement for councils to report on this enforcement activity. That also would be the subject of perhaps later legislation.
So when do you see those being brought into legislation?
Well, yes, it's very difficult to say. I mean, I think with the Renters Reform Bill in itself, it's not clear when it would be brought into force. I think these particular parts are even more unknown. Indeed, it will perhaps be kicked into the long grass and it might never see the light of day. We just don't know. And the other element, of course, is with a general election on the horizon, it may not actually be this government that makes that call. It seems pretty unlikely that these sort of reforms that have been ring-fenced off of future legislation are likely to be brought forward before the election. I think the government probably has its hands quite full dealing with a number of other matters and generally recovering from what could be considered a condensed period within which it's had to implement its many policies. You know, it's had to deal with Brexit, COVID pandemic and the war in Ukraine. All of that's made for an extremely busy period, an awful lot to cram in before the next election. So I think it's unlikely that we'll see these reforms being brought forward as legislation before the election. But, you know, who knows? We'll keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Looking at the sharp end from a renter's perspective and a landlord's perspective, do you see that this bill and the proposed changes will affect rental prices?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, rental prices are ultimately, like other markets, largely determined by supply and demand. If the supply of rental properties is restricted and not meeting demand, then rent prices are likely to increase. Whereas if there's plentiful supply of property, then rates will probably stabilise. The government has been absolutely clear that it doesn't intend to introduce rent control. It does acknowledge, and it has been included in the Renters Reform Bill, the fact that tenants should have the right to challenge any rent increases that would put the rent above that of a market rent. What we do know is that we have seen rents generally increase anyway. We've seen rents already increasing, and this is in the press relatively frequently. And there are a few reasons for this, but again, it's supply and demand. We know that there has been an exodus of landlords from the sector over the last couple of years. And there will be a whole multitude of reasons why landlords may have chosen to leave the private rented sector. Pressure with the increasing interest rates over the last few months will be impacting some of those landlords. But, you know, if they have mortgages to service, this will be a factor. Essentially, their costs have increased, and it could be that the cost of servicing their mortgage debt exceeds that of the rent that they receive. So that will cause cash flow issues. So that's one factor. However, we have seen increasing regulation of the private let sector over the recent past. It's seen with a less attractive tax regime for landlords, an awful lot of prospective investment that landlords will need to carry out if the government implements its energy efficiency plans to increase the let sector to Band C. Indeed, as well as potential other standards if they implement the decent home standards as well. And then, of course, landlords will have the perception, you know, whether it's real or not, they may have the perception that they're going to lose the ability to regain possession easily, or indeed perhaps at all, properties they let out. And so that all contributes to the mix. So I think, in short, perversely, I mean, the government's really trying to assist tenants and bring about legislation to protect them. But actually, it may exacerbate what we're already seeing with the private let sector, with a lack of supply of properties to rent, and therefore, essentially, an increase in rents of the properties that are left.
And just going back to timelines, the government says that the existing bill could be law by the end of the year. What do landlords and tenants need to do now?
Well, I think most tenants are going to welcome the prospective changes. Although some of the new modified grounds for the landlord to regain possession under Section 8 might need to be brought to tenants' attention, so for example, those around antisocial behaviour, in the main, the abolishment of Section 21, the no-fault ground, is going to leave many tenants feeling a lot more secure in their property. You know, they know that the landlord has to make out a specified ground in order to regain possession. Landlords, it will really depend on how many properties they have and their general feeling of their portfolios, and they should review their position objectively. I think the first thing to say is that even when it gets royal assent, and we mentioned it right at the beginning, doesn't necessarily mean that the changes will be brought in at the same time or indeed even in the near future. Many landlords who have properties where they have a good relationship with the tenant's paying rent, the reforms probably may be of absolute little consequence. It's worth landlords perhaps obtaining some advice and being aware of prospective future changes and what investment their portfolios may need in future in order to, for example, meet increasing EPC standards, or indeed if the decent home standards does get brought in, if there's work to be done, and whether or not that's still an attractive investment. But, you know, for many landlords, I think there are a whole multitude of things to consider, and it's viewing it in the round and whether, on balance, for many landlords, it will probably still be seen as an integral part of what they do, and where they have tenants that are sort of stable with good relationships, it may mean that for now they need to do nothing.
What about those with existing tenancies? What will they need to do when it comes to renewing their lease?
Well, I think, again, for now, you know, we're still under the current Housing Act 1988 as it's been amended, and when agreements come up for renewal, they can be renewed in the normal way. If the reforms go ahead as per the bill, it's very hard to second guess. I mean, I think the best thing to do is really, as an end of tenancy perhaps is approaching, is possibly for the landlord just to consider if they're happy being a landlord and want to continue to let. But if they are, I think that they just renew the tenancy in the normal way. When the reforms take effect, if it's a fixed term agreement, at some point in the future, it will come under the new regime.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. It seems that this is a relatively balanced, if long-awaited, bill, which should play in favour of both landlords and tenants, protecting their rights on both sides. But there's a lot of devil in the detail, clearly, and professional advisers will need to be comprehensively briefed to serve their clients well. As ever, CAAV experts will be happy to answer any questions members may have. Rebecca, thank you very much for joining me.
And there we are. We've reached the end of yet another episode of the CAAV podcast. If you want to keep up to date with all future episodes, or indeed catch up on previous ones, please head to our website, or you can subscribe for free on whatever platform you use. Also, if you have any feedback or ideas for future episodes, please get in touch by emailing us on enquire@caav.org.uk. That's it for today, so until the next time, thank you very much for listening. Bye for now.